Welcome to Real Flicks Reviews, or like a book club for people hate reading. This week we're doing the movie To Be or Not to Be, produced by Mel Brooks, made 1983. And we bring you movie news at the end of the program. This week we have Jonathan Charney, James Stevens, and Ryan Preston. So who has the description of this movie?
I guess that would be me. To be or not to be?
That
a bad
question.
Polish actor is just trying to make a living when what should intrude, but World War... That's weird. When what should intrude? But World War II in the form of an invasion.
Question. And what should intrude?
That's exactly. I'm like, that's actually what IMDb says.
Oh,
a bad Polish actor is just trying to make a living when what should intrude, but World War II in the form of an invasion. That's just weird the way they did that.
We're correcting grammar live on the show.
It's a little poetic for IMDb.
I know. I'm like, who the hell wrote that one? Are you on crack? Anyway, I'm going to jump into this one.
Directed and produced by Mel Brooks.
No, this wasn't directed. According to IMDb,
it was not directed.
Just produced.
Really?
He just produced it. It was directed by Alan Johnson.
Yeah.
Oh.
Because I think this is the first movie we've ever done with Mel Brooks in it that all he does is produce. Just, you know, he's not...
Well, he acted.
Behind the scenes.
Yeah,
smartass.
Well, him and his wife, and pretty much a lot of other people.
But this is a remake of a comedy style of turned into a comedy of a movie from 1942, To Be or Not to Be, as well.
Right, right.
Oh, so this is the okay.
Yeah, this is this is the Mel Brooks version of it.
Right, a little more satirical.
Yeah, more satirical. It like it said is directed by Alan Johnson instead of Mel Brooks, but. You know, for a Mel Brooks produced movie, I think this was actually really well done. As far as he being an actor, it's not as funny as I expect from Mel Brooks.
But look at where the points of the comedy are. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's with the theater group and then the, you know, some of the Nazi stuff, obviously, with, Charles Durning and Christopher Lloyd.
Yeah, thank you.
This movie's kind of a slog at parts. There's parts that you just
really
kind of...
It's really juxtaposed with kind of a serious subject matter, though. You know?
Well, Mel Brooks films, usually when you watch them, the jokes are one right after the other, one after the other. And when I think of comedy, Mel Brooks is in the top five names that I think of, the first three being Chico, Harpo, and Groucho.
Yeah.
So that's really saying something, is that Mel Brooks is like number four in that mix. But... So I really don't shortchange him in this. I just am saying that as far as most Mel Brooks movies, this is more as what Ryan was saying, is that this is a story being motivated by comedy.
See, this I do have a question. This is a little bit of a non sequitur. Do you think this is kind of be like what Jerry Lewis's The Day the Crown Cried? Like, because it was, you know, because that one took place in a Nazi concentration camp, you know, trying to be funny. Do you think the movie kind of would have had the same feel as this one does?
Yeah, I mean, I think it was almost the same kind of thing. Because, I mean, look, dude, how many World War II stories have you seen? You know what I mean? I mean, even back in 1983 when this was made, how many World War II movies have been made?
Yeah.
You know, everybody's seen the big scope and the crazy things. And, you know, then you have stuff like, Hogan's Heroes or Kelly's Heroes.
Yeah,
little more on the funny side, but this is kind of a small story, you know, just about these people and their experience with World War II. You know?
Well, I think what the issue that Mel Brooks has is he's doing a comedy about something very serious,
mm-hmm.
right?
Which is what Ryan mentioned when he picked the movie, is, you know, kind of see how Mel Brooks takes this as a serious story doing a comedy. There were little things that were really, really funny.
What was
besides a Jew playing Hitler, you know, there's the guy who does the sign of the Star of David instead of the cross on his chest.
Yeah.
The triangle scene.
And I still believe that Shakespeare was circumcised, you know. But, you know, there's lots
Hitler
of different things. there's lots of different subtleties. And even when the clowns, towards the end of the movie, when all the clowns are escaping and there's that old woman who's terrified walking through a room of Nazis, and the guy comes back and sticks Stars of David's on them and goes, Juden, makes a joke out of it.
Is all the comedy, it didn't seem like, you know, a lot of Mel Brooks movies, you know, the comedy happens despite the story. You know what I mean? This happens and it doesn't, it helps it along and doesn't change anything.
Yeah, that's kind of what I was saying is that, you know, it's a story being motivated by the jokes and
right,
the
and,
little
and by
things.
This theater company. And, well, I mean, obviously there's a lot of satirical stuff. I mean, with the whole intro being in Polish and then the yeah. announcer and Bancroft's great look on her.
But see, I think part of that is I think there's those are the influence parts, I think, of Mel Brooks.
Oh, absolutely. I think he had a big hand. That's why I always thought he directed it.
Because one of the other scene I actually thought was pretty funny. And they made it at, you know, because it was a serious scene. You know, it was the gay, was he her that lady's dresser, his wife's dresser,
yeah,
the gay
Sasha.
Guy.
Yeah.
He ended a pink triangle, you know, and she noticed it and she said, you know, if you're homosexual, you've got to have it on there. And he said, don't wait up for me. She's like, you know, she's like, why? It's like, I have a date with another triangle.
Yeah.
I mean, just the balance on this movie is actually pretty amazing between being respectful and disrespectful. I mean, it's quite amazing the line he towed on this movie.
I wouldn't even call it disrespectful. I'd call it just you know, making fun of you know, the, you know, semi-serious subject matter, but not in bad places or poor, you know, places.
You know, because my other favorite set, you know, when they were talking about, because what was Mel Brooks' name in this movie? Bronski?
Yeah.
I love... Do you remember Bronski? He's world famous in Poland.
Yeah.
I mean, just, you could, there's lines that are kind of subtle that are definitely, okay, that
well,
was
yeah,
Mel Brooks'
influence.
There's
always classic, you know, setup punchline stuff with Mel Brooks. The, another bouquet of yellow roses from our secret admirer. Like, he must be hopelessly in love with me, or maybe his father's a florist. He comes in, oh, don't worry, my father's a florist.
And the guy's like, you know, those bobby pins or whatever. Pink, pink.
when in the beginning, when they're listening to the radio and Bronski goes over and listens to the door that's not attached to anything. I mean, it's a lot of theater jokes, you know, a lot of really subtle, you know, little plays on theater stuff.
I did learn a new...
Yeah, I liked also that, I don't know if any of you guys caught this, but I caught this when he was in the... when he found out that there was a second list back at the hotel and he gets back to the hotel, pulls it out of the thing, and then sets it on fire and drops it in the trash can. Why didn't he use the fireplace right behind him?
That's a good question.
I don't know.
Because if it's a theater joke, the fireplace isn't really burning.
True.
Oh, I actually didn't. Wow. That was actually pretty good.
Well, see, you know, the funny thing about this movie is
Ryan's still pondering that.
This whole
right?
thing plays like a stage play.
Yeah.
You know, if you watch it, everybody's body is turned towards the camera. There's nothing that's really, it's a lot of wide shots, you know.
What this really reminded me of, and I do have to give hats off to Christopher Lloyd's performance, one of the best performances I've seen him do.
You do, Guff.
As a young man as well.
Oh, it's the greatest thing.
I don't know anything about that. but... you know, this movie completely and utterly reminded me of The Producers, which is another one that's directed and produced by Mel Brooks both times.
Mm-hmm.
And I got to say, you know, you won't hear me say this very often, but the only other person who played a better Nazi than Christopher Lloyd in my mind is Will Ferrell.
Wait, he's not a Nazi?
Yeah,
think about that.
Maybe.
Think about his role in that
Nazi
movie. Yeah, Will Ferrell's Nazi was amazing
in
2005.
What movie was he a Nazi?
The Producer in 2005.
Oh, okay.
The Producers.
The remake of it.
The remake of it.
Really the only good thing about that movie.
But
other than that, I prefer the Nathan Lane one.
It's probably the only good thing he's ever done, too.
But if you watch...
Oh, well, let's not go that far, dude. Come on.
Yeah. I was getting away with, you know, a slight compliment to the jackass. Anyway.
Well, I know. I had to knock it down a few pegs.
But... like Ryan's saying, if you watch those movies and then you look at this one, it's done in kind of the same style,
mm-hmm.
where they're always conscious of the camera. It's not like you're going to ever see anybody's back.
The exaggerations with the hands are really big. And
I did.
You're sitting in the back of an audience.
I did learn a new term, though, that I was looking something up. Ever heard the term Shylocking?
Yes.
I've never heard that before. here's the thing. I actually know of Shylock. I know that thing, but I've never heard of. I never actually realized there was a term for when people use the "Do we not bleed?" If you know, I've never heard that called Shylocking.
Anyway, but actually, that was a really well done scene as well. Basically, pretty much because it's kind of making fun of a whole other thing, but it was really well done, and I like the fact that they looked at each person. as giving a performance in front of everybody else.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Like even when Mel Brooks gets back as Bronski and he's sitting in the room and he's like, I just gave the best performance of my life and nobody saw it.
Yeah, that was the great, yeah, that was a great moment by Mel Brooks.
That was. Actually, Mel Brooks had quite a few great moments in here as an actor.
Yeah, definitely. See, definitely. I think and Anne Bancroft next to him, I mean, she's just the classiest broad that ever lived.
Actually, I like the end where they're doing the credits and she's got hers in parentheses and he's kind of
he does the hand
motion and disappears. That was actually a really good little thing to toss in there too.
I think,
and the fact that instead of doing normal credits, they did all the credits of the top main actors like you would do at a stage performance. Have them all come out and clap and applaud.
There are a couple of scenes in this movie that I think would play very well even in a serious movie. The one scene where he meets the actual doctor, you know, when he said, you know, when he starts freaking out, and I think that scene, as goofy as it is, I actually think that would play off in a more serious movie.
Dude, you take the jokes out of this movie, it's a really serious movie.
Yes. Yeah.
You know, if these people weren't comedy actors and they were just, you know, just theater people doing, you know, stage dramas, this would be a very serious and very good movie.
Well, then go watch the original.
Now it's very it's a very good and very funny movie.
Yeah. Anyways, you know, what I was going to basically have to say about this movie towards the end of it is Mel Brooks, as far as being one of the first names that comes up, pretty much all of his movies, except for maybe a handful of talking like three, would get nothing less than a 4. So this one, as far as I'm concerned, is an automatic 4. It doesn't go up to my top Mel Brooks movies, but it is up there.
Yeah, definitely. Well, I started with Mel Brooks, dude, when I was a kid, like watching History of the World Part 1, and you know, 11-year-old kid watching that movie, that's the funniest thing ever made. you know, obviously fell in love with Young Frankenstein, which we've talked about on this shit. And you know, Spaceballs, all the other stuff.
Wait, what did you just call our show?
I come across this just by happenstance, and it was like the most serious thing that I've ever seen him do. And the movie holds up so much better than all of his other stuff. So I find myself watching this a lot more.
Yeah. I wouldn't say I'd watch a lot more, but I still enjoy it. What was your rating? Because I gave it a 4.
Definitely. People weren't clear on that. Like you said, I mean, as far as like the quintessential Mel Brooks movie, I mean, you know, probably Blazing Saddles, you know what I mean, or Young Frankenstein.
That one, Blazing Saddles, is on my list to be watched.
And but this one, I don't know, I find myself watching this, you know, once a year or something.
Really?
Yeah, wow. Yeah, it's just kind of an entertaining movie, and there's so much of the little subtle humor with Mel Brooks type of things, and the rest of the company, and then all the Nazi shit. Dude, Charles Durning, Christopher Lloyd, kills me in this movie, dude.
Oh, yeah.
I am curious, because I was talking to somebody about this movie who's wondering how, if any parts of this inspired Quentin Tarantino, because there's a couple of scenes that are like, I've seen this scene before.
It might have just been two minds thinking alike, you know?
When they're talking about the basket.
Yeah.
And the point is to blow up the basket.
Yeah,
you know, or the scene where Hitler walks into that little tower you see it in the theaters, and you see the door shut, and those two guys are, you know, standing right there.
Well, and also the look of Hitler.
Yeah,
the look of Hitler was very similar to the look that Mel Brooks went through.
Yeah, I'll be honest. For me, this is
kind of giggling now.
I gotta admit, this isn't really one of my favorite Mel Brooks movie. I do think it's a, you know, for me, it's a strong 3 out of 5. I definitely think it's a movie that you gotta see. I mean, it's one of the few Mel Brooks movies I've seen that you could say that, damn, this movie's almost too serious, which is something I never thought I would say ever about Mel Brooks.
Well, then don't say it.
Yeah, seriously. But I mean, how were you interested in the story though?
I was. It was the story was interesting. I just thought for me there were times that it was like, oh my god, this, you know, it was like, I want this over with. Mainly because I expected I expected a Mel Brooks comedy, so I didn't get that. And for me it's like I had to put that into place. Okay, this is a serious movie with comedy bits, not a comedy movie with serious bits. So
Yeah, definitely not that.
So for me, I think it was a little bit because I walked in with the wrong mindset. It's Mel Brooks, so.
Right.
Well, that's probably what most people are going to come into thinking, is that this is a comedy being a comedy being motivated by a story instead of a story being motivated by comedy.
And so I think
but the funny thing is like I'm watching, you know, the first 25 minutes of this thing is all comedy pretty much, you know, with a couple little oh, it's war, you know, but I mean that's even, you know, just still in the midst of all the comedy stuff. But then it starts to get kind of serious with the whole Seletsky thing and then the lieutenant, you know, storyline thing going on. And I found myself just like, oh man, they got to stop this guy. I ended up being really invested in this thing for some reason.
I have to admit that some of my favorite scenes are the scene when he's up there doing the Hamlet soliloquy and people keep standing up, and you know, and the first time that happens they're like, what happened? He's good tonight.
Yeah. I like the fact that he stepped on the I can't think of the guy's name. What is that guy?
He's a stage director, isn't he?
No.
Sondheim?
No, the guy who helps with lines. What's the name of that guy?
Well, anyway.
Oh. I can't think of it. Anyway, well, but when he steps on his hand.
And multiple times.
Kind of gets like angry at him for trying to help him, and he's because he's just dragging out his delivery.
Yeah. He's just terrible at doing.
Yeah. And I like the fact that the first time that happened, he accidentally went, you know, stuck and, you know.
Yeah. I thought that added to the performance.
That was. I'm almost wondering if that was an accident, you know, because that played off very well.
Well, when the camera zooms up on the knife sticking in the ground, it's usually not an accident.
Yeah. Well, I meant the first time it comes up. I mean, they could have done it. It could have been like the end of Indiana Jones scene.
Ah.
You know, that's what I meant.
Yeah,
was
where
it done
he pulls
off,
the gun out and shoots.
Yeah, I mean, was it done off the cuff? And they're like, that works. Let's go with it.
No, Mel Brooks doesn't do jokes like that. Everything you see is...
purpose
set up, you know.
Yeah, it's purposeful.
What he wants it.
Well, that makes sense. And the other,
I mean, it's just what he does, you know.
Yeah. True. Everything's a joke, or all the well thought out jokes are.
No, I actually, from what I can see of Mel Brooks, he always seems like he's very serious about comedy.
Yeah,
which by itself is funny.
And he takes it very seriously and puts a lot of well thought into it, and he knows exactly what he wants. And he gets it.
Yeah.
I would always be curious to find out what it would really be like to work with him, if he is very poignant and don't mess around, let's get this right, or if he's kind of like, okay, let's kind of work with this a little bit and more relaxed. But I could see him being a mix of both. Huh?
I said that'd be interesting. I mean, I've heard, you know, a couple stories here and there of people who've worked with him, you know, who say he's, you know, just probably the funniest guy alive.
I believe that.
But still, you know, I think it's been said that he's, you know, takes it pretty seriously, too.
That's it. I know who I want. I want to see him and Robin Williams make a movie together.
They would kill each other.
I don't know.
I'm pretty sure they would, too.
Any room could hold those two.
No.
No, well,
it could
not. I
don't
know. Mel Brooks is getting up there in age, dude. He's got to be 85, 86 years old.
Well, the only reason why I say that is because there's two different comedy styles. Robin Williams is very boom, 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 off the cuff, and it fits. Mel Brooks always seemed to be very... plotted, very
well, but at the
he's
same
actually
time,
93.
He's with people like Sid Caesar, Dom DeLuise, who are great improv actors, and could go off the cuff. So he's probably used to letting people, you know, fly a little bit.
26.
If they're those type of people, I suppose.
Yeah.
83. Sorry. 83.
But, you know, I guess this just is such just a great, like, the mix of this movie is really well done.
Yeah,
I agree with you on that.
And I think this is the first movie like this I've seen that there's this well balanced. But I do think if you guys ever see it out there, is don't come in thinking it's a standard Mel Brooks comedy, because that I went in and it kind of, I think it affected. If you go in and just experience it, don't think about Mel Brooks, I think you'll end up liking it better.
Well, and you know what? I'll also not only that, but if you've never seen a Mel Brooks movie, this is probably a pretty good entry point.
Yeah. Yeah, I'd give you that. Yeah, don't do Robin Hood.
Tights.
don't start with Robin Hood Men in Tights.
I love that movie.
But so, don't start with it as your introduction to Mel Brooks.
Yeah, don't start with that, because that might put a sour taste in Robin.
What about Blazing Saddles, then, is the first one?
Blazing Saddles is a great one to start with.
Or History of the World.
Or History of the World.
Or Spaceballs.
I would say Spaceballs would be a later one.
I know for a lot of people of art...
from the 80s with Mel Brooks. That was a little.
Well, I think a lot of people from our generation, that was one of the first things they saw. That I think it was History of the World or Blazing Saddles.
I mean, the ones that you really don't want to start with are like High Anxiety, Robin Hood Men in Tights. Those are not ones that you should really start with. You could always go with starting somebody off of with a History of the World, Young Frankenstein, or Blazing Saddles.
I don't know if you folks out there can tell, but we like Mel Brooks around here.
I like Men in Tights, but I'll be honest, I don't think it's one of his better ones.
No, it's not. Sure, it's not. That's why I'm saying don't start with it. It's not that it's not funny. It's just that it's not a good starting point to be introduced to Mel Brooks because it's a different style of his comedy that he doesn't do in a lot of movies. It's similar to History of the World, but not enough that you could relate them as well.
I do have kind of because we're running up a little late coming on the movie news section, but I have one question for you guys. Is there a movie where Mel Brooks is just an actor? Because every movie I've ever seen in, he's always behind the scenes somehow.
I do not believe so. I did kind of look over something. It's not one that I know of, but this would be the closest thing that you get to him just being an actor.
Yeah, I think so. As a matter of fact, I could have swore he directed the damn thing, so, you know.
Other than voiceover stuff that he does on some cartoons, like things like that, he is not really just an actor.
Something he popped in on once or twice.
Yeah. So if anything, it would have been some of his earlier stuff then. So ladies and gentlemen, this is the portion of the show where we discuss movie news. And this week is Ryan's pick.
I think I found one.
Yeah, it is my movie news week, I suppose. And I would have some awesome movie news if everything on here wasn't about fucking 50 Shades of Grey.
Little Rascals.
I mean, literally every news source today has posted something about 50 Shades of Grey. I guess everybody's freaking out that Charlie Hunnam from Sons of Anarchy is going to be the lead role.
Wait, I thought you were a fan of Twilight fan fiction.
What?
Didn't you know that's where that 50 Shades of Grey came from? It's Twilight fan fiction.
No, it's not.
Yeah, it actually is. It's how it started.
Yeah, it has nothing to do with that.
That's how 50 Shades of Grey started. Is originally as fan fiction.
That's even worse than I originally thought. I thought it was just some, you know, cheesy sex novel that everybody started buying.
Nope, it's a notch lower. It's fan
fiction. Does it have characters from Twilight?
You're asking the wrong person. I don't want to read 50.
How the fuck do you know this in the first place? You're already kind of freaking me out, Johnny.
I read a shitload of movie news.
Man, okay. At least you can back me up on everybody reporting on 50 Shades of Stupid Grey. Time, dude. I mean, this movie's gonna make, you know, $100 million just because apparently women kind of will go out in droves for this.
I have a random question.
I have yet to understand this.
I have a random question. Do you think it'll get an X rating? Because I've never heard anything about this book.
You don't give movies X ratings anymore.
Well, I've never heard anything about this book that doesn't have porn innuendos. Do you think
There's movies that have walked the line, like Eyes Wide Shut. I know it's not a good movie, but it's still an example of that kind of sexuality in a movie, I suppose, you know?
Because that's the only part I'm interested in, as far as...
I've seen that movie, and I don't remember it being that bad.
Well, I mean, they...
Was
they
it pushing porn?
You know what I mean?
Okay. So I guess I just kind of am like, whatever. Another sex scene, who cares?
There was an orgy scene in that movie.
Was it? There was? Yeah.
Yes, well, there was in the...
Gosh, it's been a long time since I've seen it then.
Or it's just like Perfume, Story of a Murderer. I mean, come on. Hey. Except a smaller scale.
Okay.
But see, this movie, when the book came out and everybody was buying it, all the chicks that I knew, like my sister, for example, who read it...
Which, by the way, if my sister read it, I seriously don't want to hear about it. I have no desire.
I mean, I think I just saw it, and I was like, are you seriously reading that? And started flipping her a bunch of shit for it. But she just said, I mean, like, it's the dumbest thing ever. And so if
then
they
why read
know
it?
It's the dumbest thing ever, how is this movie going to be anything?
I think it's just going to be chick porn. I mean, I think that's basically what it comes down to.
I guess that's what
they're
doing.
Well, that's why you throw Charlie Hunnam in it.
$100 million and call it a day. But
whoa!
It's a shame.
Wait, did you say it got $100 million?
I said they're going to make $100 million.
Okay, I was going to say, if that's the budget, holy crap.
This better be the best damn movie ever.
It'll be the modern
version
of Caligula.
I'm not going to waste my time with it.
No male in the world is going to waste their time with it. And I really feel sorry for the dudes who are weak enough to get dragged by their old lady to go see this movie.
So do you actually have any movie news that's, well, interesting?
Yeah, well, there's one other thing I wanted to bring up. Penn and Teller, who, I don't know if anybody knows them, they know him as Magician. Thank you.
He said magicians for everybody who didn't hear that. They also did the HBO series, or is it Showtime? Bullshit.
That was a great show.
Which was a great show, and mostly about just
bullshit.
You know, a lot of skepticism type of stuff, but it was really good and really funny. So that's where most people know sort of their TV stuff aside from magic. But Teller started doing a documentary called, and I'm trying to find the name of it, Tim's Vermeer. And this is basically Teller's, the silent one, the short one who doesn't speak. He did a documentary basically about a painter and whether or not I don't really want to go into too much detail about it, but it's about a painter and whether or not it was like painted by, I can't remember if it was like painted by a machine, but this was like a long ass time ago. And I don't know. I keep hearing a couple of different things about it, but it just got out of the film festival circuit. Jesus, I can't talk.
Question: does Teller actually talk?
No, he just directed it. Well, he talks, but just not on camera.
Okay, because when you said this, I was thinking, okay, he's the narrator, so he's just straight director.
Yeah.
Is this Tim's Vermeer?
Yeah.
Tim's Vermeer. I'm not sure if he actually speaks in the thing. He might. I've heard him talk.
I've heard him talk.
Oh, yeah, he does talk, but it's not, it's generally in interviews, generally not always on camera. It's right. Very rare to actually get him talk. Apparently he does in person, but on camera.
Anytime he's with Penn from Penn and Teller, I mean, they don't, that's their
answer. It's kind of like Harpo. Very few people ever heard him talk.
I always used to think that he was just like Harpo, but then I found out that he's talked a few times in public, and Harpo never talked to anybody but family.
Well, that's why I said just like, not exactly.
When he was out on the street, he wouldn't speak a word. It's amazing.
Well, yeah, I mean,
for that long?
That's commitment right there.
For that long. The only time he talked was his last show.
You know what? That's going to be a new insult. I'm going to tell people, can you just be like Harpo?
Because his last show,
I'm sure they'd be insulted, John, if they knew what you were talking about.
Harpo Marx told everybody.
Just like Fibber McGee's closet.
He checked everybody for cameras, any type of recording device, and banned it from the show.
Mm-hmm.
And then cut everybody off. No media, no nothing.
Well, at least at
and
the
then
time,
he came out
every
and talked.
Type of recording device was this big.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's true.
It's not exactly like somebody sneaking in a trench coat.
Yeah. Well, unless the trench coat is covered with recording device. It is a recording device. Anyways, Teller is a
trench coat.
Teller, I actually have a lot of respect for Penn and Teller.
Yeah, me too. And that's why after hearing a ton about, you know, how well this movie's been received, I definitely want to see it. And I know it just came out sort of probably on VOD.
Actually, it says the release date is 2014.
I wonder if it has a similar feel as Bullshit, because that had a very serious tone, but with, you know, but comedy bits to lighten up. I wonder if it has any feel like that, because they seem to, at least on Bullshit, to go out of their way to at least most of the time be fair.
Penn Jillette's on it.
Yeah.
Penn Jillette is one of the people that's billed on here. Okay. So there's probably going to be some comedy element. Penn Jillette can't do that.
I guess I just meant
he cannot be not funny.
I guess I just mean the fairness of it, because they seem everything they do has a bias, but he seems to at least try to be fair.
Now he cuts it down the middle line, but gives you his opinion.
That's why, you know, people, even if you disagree with them, you understand that he's trying to give a fair account of both sides of the situation.
Exactly.
Even if it is something like, you know, fucking, you know,
aliens,
astrology or whatever,
yoga. Yeah.
Reflect.
Oof.
Yeah, go back and watch some of those shit episodes. Those were pretty good. It was a Showtime show.
They used to be on Netflix. I don't know if they are, but if you ever get a chance, check it out.
I've watched every last one. I was so disappointed when they stopped making them.
Yeah, me too. So, well, apparently, Penn Jillette has another Showtime or HBO thing in the works that he can't speak about at the moment. So.
Yeah,
that'll be awesome. So next week is our theater pick.
Bum, ba-dum, bum, bum.
And we picked the movie Elysium 2013 with Matt Damon.
Because why the fuck wouldn't we?
Because the other choice is World War Z.
True. Exactly. No, that's not still out, is it?
Yeah, I don't
know. All I know is every time I see a Matt Damon in that movie, I'm always looking for Ben Affleck somewhere in the background.
He's probably dead in the base floorboards.
You know, he's a corpse somewhere going, you know.
He's the telltale heart.
Oh, jeez. So, ladies and gentlemen, make sure you check that check out next week's show doing the sci-fi movie Elysium. And I gave To Be or Not to Be, made in 1983, a 3 out of 5. James gave it a 4 out of 5. Ryan gave it a 4 out of 5. And our missing co-host, Jeff Michaels, gave it a 3 out of 5. And we'll see you next week.
Goodbye.